Welcome to the Roadmap to Wealth podcast. My name is Carlos McWhorter, CPA. And this is episode 2 of this podcast. And I want to talk about them people that you can't shop like they shop. You can't eat out like they can eat out at different restaurants. You can't travel like they travel. You can't wear what they wear. You can't drive what they drive. But yet sometimes you still try to keep up with them. I'm talking about them daggone Joneses, man. Keeping up with the Joneses, how it causes financial distress and how it shows that we have the wrong focus, but also how easy it is to fall into this trap. So I think anybody in existence have at least once done something with their spending that's been out of character, or that you're spending money that you can't afford, to not feel left out or to feel like you're not less than somebody else. For instance, if you're going on a trip with some friends and maybe you can't afford to stay in a hotel that everybody is staying in, but you go ahead and stay in there anyway because you don't want to be at the Motel 6 while everyone else is at the Hilton or at the Westin, just to feel like you fit in, or so you're not exposed as someone or the only one that can't afford that trip or that expense. These are simple things that we do that are keeping up with the Joneses, even though they're not maybe significant things. But this one particular study that I found very, very interesting, that was produced in 2016. This study produced by the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. Now, the title of the study is, "Does Keeping Up with the Joneses Cause Financial Distress? Evidence from Lottery Winners and Neighboring Bankruptcies." So pretty much they looked at these lottery winners in this particular province in Canada, and they noticed that neighbors of these lottery winners were filing for bankruptcy. You hear a lot of stories about how lottery winners end up going broke, but you don't really hear about the neighbors of the lottery winners increasing their spending and ending up going bankrupt, or just being in a bad situation because they overextended themselves because they want to look like the neighbor that won the lottery. I just found it interesting because, again, I never heard of this scenario. So this study looked at data from 2004 to 2014, and the lottery winnings ranged from $1,000 to $150,000. And they found that for every $1,000 won by the lottery winner, the likelihood of increased borrowing and bankruptcies in the winner's particular neighborhood increased by 2.4%. For every $1,000 that somebody won, it was a 2.4% chance that someone around them increased their borrowing and ended up bankrupt. Now, the first thing I did, now this is something I try not to do when I read about these studies. Sometimes we automatically separate ourselves from the people who are in the scenario or the study, as if their human experience is different from ours. And the thing is, we can fall into these traps just like they can. You know what I mean? It seems like obvious, but when you break it down, it's not so much a straightforward consequence. And what I mean is, imagine your neighbor wins $150,000 in lottery winnings. Not a great deal as far as lottery, but that can change someone's life. So as $150 is still a lot of money. They get that money, and let's just say they might get a new car. They might, get some landscaping done. They might get a jet ski. They might get some remodeling done in their house, right? So you and the neighbors are seeing this. Now, so your next door neighbor might see it, and they might get a new car. So you're also seeing that new car along with all the things that the lottery winners are doing. And then the other neighbor, they might get some, like, their kitchen remodeled. So you're seeing this new car, you're seeing from your neighbor, you're seeing the lottery winner doing all these things and buying and going on trips. And your other neighbor, the contractor, pulling up into their driveway for a month, maybe 2 months, doing the remodeling. And you see, as you're talking to your neighbors, you find out this person goes on a trip, or this person does these other things, or spending more money. So it's not just that, you see a neighbor, they got money, and now you go spend. It's all the neighbors around doing something little here and there. Next thing you know, the atmosphere of the neighborhood is kind of changing. You're seeing these new things, right? So as you're seeing these new things, you know how we can be sometimes. You're planning on getting a new car 3 years from now. Now that you're seeing all these other people getting new cars or getting some things done, this atmosphere of spending starts to circulate in your mind. And all of a sudden, that car that you were going to replace in 3 years, maybe you go do it in 6 months. Like, assuming maybe you can afford to do so, but all of a sudden you're in this realm of spending or in this realm of trying to match what you're seeing around you. Now, this could be consciously or subconsciously. This isn't necessarily you trying to impress somebody. This could be just simply getting an itch to go spend more money just because you're seeing all the people around you spend money. And this is what's happening in these neighborhoods with lottery winners. Like, the lottery winner isn't necessarily going broke, but a lot of the neighbors are spending money, overextending themselves to keep up with this person that just happened to win the lottery. And I want to read this this kind of definition of keeping up with the Joneses that's in this introduction of the study. It says, keeping up with the Joneses hypothesis states that an individual's utility is related to matching the consumption of the individual's social reference or peer groups. A mechanism for keeping up with the Joneses is conspicuous consumption, where individuals attempt to signal increased status by consuming specific goods that are more visible to their social reference or peer groups. Now, another thing that's interesting is when we're talking about keeping up with the Joneses, it's always, always a physical, visible asset. And that's the things that get these people in trouble, because many of these assets are depreciating assets. You know, maybe remodeling your house might actually increase the value of your home, but it does no good if you actually can't afford it and you're taking out debt to do so, just to show off to neighbors when you host a cookout next year. It's just interesting how when we're trying to keep up with somebody, like when someone wins a lottery, and let's just say that person who wins a lottery, they may go buy a new car, but the rest of the money they may invest. So they're more financially secure now that they've won the lottery, right? We don't assume that, okay, to match what they're doing, we need to invest more. Or to match what they're doing, we need to be more financially secure. For whatever reason, when we're trying to match it, we go out and buy something physical to show off. The whole thing about the Joneses is making sure our peer groups can see us as our status potentially increases. Like, the whole point of keeping up with the Joneses is so that they can see us in a different or higher status. So they have to see something physical that we buy or that we possess. And the assumption is, now that we have this thing, this bag, these shoes, we're on IG showing off these vacations, that our status has gone up because of that. Another thing about the Joneses is you can never chase the Joneses. Like, the Joneses could be the Kardashians on IG. It could be some other celebrity flexing on IG, or somebody you don't even know who could be faking, acting like they have a bunch of things but they don't. It could be friends that save better than you do so they can spend a little bit more. You can never nail down who the Joneses are. And if you're in that scenario, anybody and everybody could potentially be the Joneses in any scenario, causing you to spend more money than what you have, putting yourself in a bad position. It's all about setting your financial future and just having a plan in place, being content, not so much with where you are, because let's be honest, contentment is powerful and it can keep you from making a lot of bad decisions. But a lot of us are not in the position where we actually can be content, because we just aren't in a position where we have everything we need or have everything we want, or we can retire right now and walk away and just be fine. So a lot of us aren't in positions to be content. However, you have to put yourself in a position where you are on a journey and you're happy about your progress. You're happy about where you're going. You're happy with your plan and you executing that plan. So you may not be happy where you are or content with where you are, but you have to be content with where you're going in order to keep yourself from making these bad financial decisions. Now, one of the main things that I found that can help avoid this scenario, trying to keep up with the Joneses, is removing the emotional attachment we have with money. That's a hard thing to do, and a lot of people spend a lifetime trying to master this. In order to do this successfully, you have to know who you are. Again, this process doesn't even involve money, but when you have this process down, and when you figured yourself out, in a sense, money becomes easy. If I know myself, I know the things that makes me happy, and I know the things that doesn't make me happy. And I'm focused on the things that actually make me happy. I'm focused on staying with my plan and being content. And of course, I have, you know, different expenditures or things that I like built into my plan or built into my budget as a reward system or as a thing that keeps me kind of in line with who I am, who I say I am. If you're trying to build wealth, but you just love traveling, you need to put traveling in your budget. That way you're content with your plan to continue to build wealth and save and invest at the rate that you're doing it, along with experiencing the things that you're passionate about as well. That's really the only way you're actually going to get there. There aren't that many people who can really live super strict and not enjoy life in order to have something later on down the road. But a lot of people suggesting it have never done it themselves. It's not the most practical situation to be in to be successful. Just like someone who is trying to get in shape and they're working out. Imagine if someone hates to lift weights, but they want to get in shape. So all they do for fitness is lifting weights. The chances of them being successful doing that is very slim. Versus if they really enjoyed playing tennis, but instead of playing tennis for fitness, all they did was go to the gym and throw weights around and they don't enjoy it. Chances are, just using common sense, that person can get in shape and enjoy the process and probably stick with their plan if tennis is a major part, or at least a significant part of their plan. Knowing the things that you like keeps you from following the Joneses and spending money on things that you don't like to try to impress or fit in or not feel like you're less than someone else. So these are the simple things you can do and focus on. That way you can, again, have that plan, have confidence in that plan, be content that you're making progress in that plan to get to your goals, and remove the human tendencies out of financial decision making. And when I mean by human tendencies, I mean emotional decision making. I remember some years ago, I went through this process of just looking at the things that I like to buy and I like felt good when I purchased them and having them, and then seeing that I could be better off financially if I felt this way when I bought stocks. And just being honest, I wasn't always there. I would feel better about buying a pair of Jordans than I did about buying stock. And then I started noticing that and purposefully changing my mindset about what really mattered, buying that shoe or putting my family in a better financial situation. I have to feel better about that, the latter, versus any type of product or something that gives me some temporary joy. Because of course, me 20 years from now is going to prefer that I went and bought stock with that money versus buying products or buying any type of temporary thing that's not going to benefit me in the future. So I started to feel much better about those financial decisions than I did about consumption. And again, it boils down to making sure that you have your priorities and your priorities lining up with what you're really passionate about and what you truly care about. Again, like I said before, don't separate yourself from these people who are living the same life experience as you are, assuming that you're not going to feel the same pressure that they felt when they fell into this trap of trying to keep up with these other people. As soon as you do that, you're setting yourself up for failure. You can and will fall into the same trap if you're not aware of what's going on internally when you're seeing and feeling these pressures. So it's always good to be mindful of where you are emotionally when you're feeling these pressures, identifying what you're scared of. And I think the most important lesson here is to do that self-evaluation to understand where your place of contentment is in life. That's going to be the most powerful force that keeps you on track and keeps you from looking at things that you can't afford and trying to acquire those things to impress other people. So that wraps up this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, consider hitting the like button and subscribing to my channel. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you in the next video.